Can we start? Good. Welcome, everyone. My name is Emre Sayın. I'm the CEO of Global Ports Holding. This is the 2017 full year results presentation. Before I start, in case any of you are wondering why we have these colorful images here and not, you know, ships and ports, we are a destination marketing company, and we kind of wanted to highlight that. So we are starting with the colorful glasses from Murano in Venice. So that's what you see, one of the things you see when you visit our port in Venice on a cruise ship. We will start with 2017 highlights and a picture from Valletta, Malta. So we are happy with the results, given the challenging geopolitical conditions outside of our control in 2017. We have seen strong trading performance despite slow recovery in Turkish cruise ports. Our full year performance was driven by both strong increases in cruise passenger numbers, which is a very strong variable parameter for our business, which were up 15.2%, and also our commercial volumes, which were up 16%. We have seen in the results in the year the benefits of diversification. Revenue was flat at 1.3%, as we have indicated mid-year, highlighting the difficult start to the year, but we are pleased with the progress we saw in the second half, particularly in the fourth quarter, with revenues up 15.8%. Non-Turkish cruise ports grew strongly, with revenues up almost 10% and EBITDA up 6.3%, with improving second half trends. While Turkish cruise ports had revenues 49.2% lower, they still remain highly profitable, with EBITDA margins of 59.7%. Consolidated group EBITDA margin, although lower than the previous year, remained strong at almost 65%. We remain highly cash generative, with a cash conversion of over 80%, and are recommending a final dividend of 20.1 pence per share, bringing the total for the year to 41.7 pence per share, which sums up to $35 million, in line with our stated dividend policy. I will now hand over to Jan to talk about the financials.
Thanks, Emre. And, turning our attention before we go back to strategy outlook into the performance 2017. And, you know, as Emre has already said, I think you are used to see double-digit growth from our company over the past years in both revenue and EBITDA. I would still argue that having reported flat revenue and EBITDA is a major achievement and shows really the resilience of the model. Because within those numbers, you see, and we'll break it down further, you see a decline in the Turkish cruise ports, and which has been offset by non-Turkish cruise ports and the commercial business. So we, revenue's up 1.3%. EBITDA in line, $400,000 less than last year, with margins still being record levels, I would say, improving on the commercial side. The decline on the cruise side, cruise segmental EBITDA margin, is really due to the mix. We have the Turkish cruise ports, you know, where we developed the cruise port operating model, operating them for 10, 15 years, 14 years. We have high margins, so reducing their contribution will reduce the overall margin, whereas on an individual port basis, all of our non-Turkish ports have reported increasing or stable margins. Breaking on page six for those on the phone and the webcast, page six, breaking down the performance a bit further on the left-hand side into segmental contribution, on the right-hand side over time. And that, I believe, really tells the story of the year 2017. Let me start from the left-hand side. We talked about the cruise impact, -$7 million revenue, similar decline in EBITDA, solely attributable to the Turkish ports event, which, as you all know, we saw a short-term and really one-off event of American cruise lines pulling out of Turkish cruise ports at the start of the season. This has been offset within the cruise segment with performance from other ports outside Turkey, offsetting parts of the impact, but mostly from the commercial segment. So the diversification of the business has contributed to offset a singular event in the Eastern Mediterranean cruise segment. We also see the contribution, 2.4 million on revenue, 700,000 in EBITDA from the Italian ports, which we acquired late 2016, for the first time contributing, and some FX impact. I think more relevant, though, is the right-hand side of this slide, which shows you the quarterly development of revenue and EBITDA. And we have been successfully working in the second half of the year towards fully offsetting the effect witnessed in the second quarter of the year, again, mostly due to the decline in Ege and other Turkish cruise ports of ships pulling out. So we have already returned to growth on EBITDA and revenue, and I'm also happy to report, and we'll see the details on the next slide, that also in the cruise segment itself, cruise alone, we're back to growth in the fourth quarter, year over year. I have already talked about EBITDA performance. So on this slide, page number 7, would like to highlight a few points below EBITDA. Again, for the strong non-Turkish contribution in the cruise segment, strong commercial contribution offset by Turkish cruise ports. That's the story in revenue and EBITDA. Below EBITDA, you will see an operating profit, which is declining. And this is not related to operations. We can see the full impact, that around about 10 million decline in operating profit is solely attributable to IPO expenses. So May 2017, Global Ports Holding was listed at London Stock Exchange. Total IPO cost, including boni, including employee premiums, are about 11.5 million. So you see operating profit would have actually been even slightly increased, slightly over 2016 levels. We have, moving down further in the P&L, we see a loss for the year, an IFRS loss for the year. Again, you see the IPO expenses, the main contributor to this decline in profitability. And we also have a, because of euro-dollar exchange rate fluctuations, we have a non-cash foreign currency impact of about 5 million in these numbers. We have adjusted our profitability statement to report an underlying profit. So this line item here, the underlying profit, we believe, is closer to the actual cash generation of the business on a normalized basis. It excludes IPO expenses. So this one-off effect, which is not going to be there in any other year than 2017, and we also add, will be familiar with our financial statements. We also add the depreciation of port operation rights, which is a non-cash IFRS only element of about 31 million, and hence we believe the underlying profit is the real normalized guideline of what we should look at when analyzing profitability of global ports. Emre has talked about the dividend already. I want to go a bit more into the details of the specific segments, starting with the cruise segment. And above all, as Emre said, see a very solid and very strong 15% passenger growth. This, in part, comes from the addition of the Italian ports, but even accounting for the Italian port first-time consolidation, we see in the overall portfolio a 3.5% passenger growth. And that comes despite the 53.4% decline in Ege Port, which is the largest Turkish cruise port, not even adding the decline in Antalya and Bodrum. So the overall portfolio, the diversification of the portfolio, is able to absorb a strong decline in one of its cruise port and still growing as an overall portfolio at 3.5%. And I should have also mentioned that obviously makes a strong increase in the European cruise ports, which have grown about 10.9%-11% in the passenger basis, which is well above the Mediterranean or European growth in passenger volumes. Again, showing that our marquee ports are able to grow much quicker than the overall market. Turning then to page nine, our attention to the individual ports' profitability. And I would like to start again with it's the story of the year, I guess, with the Turkish cruise ports, strongly emphasizing what Emre has already said. I think it would be very difficult to see any business in the world which is able to digest a more than 50% revenue drop and still being able to report EBITDA margins, in the case of Egeport, of 61%. Overall, our Turkish cruise ports, including Bodrum and Antalya, still generate 50%, or close to 60%, similar to Ege, 60% segmental EBITDA margin. And despite the significant decline in revenue, shows how profitable the cruise port business really is. On the other ports, you see record years for Valletta. As a matter of fact, since Valletta has been taken over by GPH, we have a record year after record year. We're still heading into a record year this year. Let's see when the trend stops, but so far no end in sight. And for Croyers, a stable EBITDA. This year's passenger volume growth was really driven by Malaga, which is the smaller of the two Spanish ports combined in Croyers, whereas Barcelona was flat in terms of its numbers. So overall resulting in stable profitability. Turning our attention to the commercial side, as we have said in the introduction, the volume growth and EBITDA well, the volume growth was the key driver here for improved revenues and EBITDA. We actually even have significantly higher volume growth than revenue. Double-digit 16% both on the container side and on the bulk cargo side. What's the main driver in terms of the goods? On the container side, as you know, Antalya is an export port. More than 90% of its volumes go into exports. And on the container, that's mostly marble. And indeed, the marble export was the main driver of the TEUs in Antalya, reaching for the first time more than for a couple of years, 200,000 TEUs per year. And also in Adria, thanks to the completion of our investment program, increased turnaround times, increased operational capacities, a similar, even slightly higher, 18% increase in container volumes in Adria, driven by a broad mix of cargo. On the at the bottom of the page, the bulk volume in Antalya, again, export-driven. The main cargo here is cement. In Adria, Montenegro, a strong increase, over 150% growth, which is the recovery of the steel coil exports. One of the factories in 2016, which was a main export of steel coils through Port of Adria, temporarily shut down operations and now is coming back and is the main driver of the volume increase. In terms of revenues and EBITDA, I think the Antalya is a stellar performance in Antalya. We now are close to 80% EBITDA margin in Antalya, and that's driven by the further increase in the TU business. And as a matter of fact, it has even accelerated both top line and EBITDA growth in the fourth quarter. So it's really a 46.4 million EBITDA, very strong performance. Also supported, to be fair, to some degree by an exchange rate, favorable exchange rate movement. As you know, Antalya earns dollar tariffs, but pays most of its cost in Turkish lira. So the appreciation of the dollar helped profitability, but I'd say the main driver is volume growth. Volume growth in the container business. Port of Adria, We talked about this in a number of results presentations, quarterly results presentations. You see a top line EBITDA declining. However, if we look into the details, we see a missing contribution from Project Cargo of around $1.3-1.5 million, which was contracted cargo and didn't come through. We have tried to give you the relative share in the presentation, in the chart, excluding Project Cargo and what we would refer to as the day-to-day operation, the handling of containers and bulk cargo, is increasing. We believe in the turnaround of Port of Adria. Investment program is essentially completed, and we see a 20%-30% revenue EBITDA increase if Project Cargo is excluded. Turning our attention now, page 12, to balance sheet cash flow metrics. The debt profile with 3x net debt to EBITDA, absolutely in line with IPO policy. We believe we have still significant resources, both in available cash and leverage headroom to continue growing the business, and we'll come to that in the second part of the presentation. We net debt down to $228 million. Key driver for that is, of course, the IPO proceeds collected in May this year. And we have, on the bottom left of this slide, still a very long-term stable debt profile. No immediate maturities, of course, dominated by the Eurobond due 2021. And we have no currency mismatch. The debt, same as for the earnings, is incurred in dollars and euro in approximate similar breakdown. So no currency mismatch and long-term stable debt profile. On the CapEx side, we still see about 4 to 6 million. That's absolutely in line as communicated at the IPO of maintenance CapEx. So why is then CapEx this year 14 million? This is the already indicated and communicated Port of Adria, operational improvement program, new cranes, operational software, real turnaround has been achieved in the last 3 years with about 6.5 million of this 14 in 2017 going into Port of Adria. And we have also, we believe Turkish ports will come back to the map, and we used the low season this year to renovate the shopping mall for about $3 million of CapEx. So that explains why we have a 13 to 14 million CapEx this year rather than 4 to 6, which you would see on a normalized basis as maintenance CapEx. I would suggest we have talked about the income statement on page 13. I want to, last slide in my bit of the presentation, I want to spend a bit more time on balance sheet and cash flows, specifically on cash flows. But first and foremost, we still have about 100 million. If you include short-term investments, it's 115 million of cash, available cash for growth, inorganic growth. But then turning our attention to the cash flow, and I would really, particularly the analyst investors, I think for us that's the key metric, and that's really also the key metric for management in terms of cash flow generation, because you have, frankly, in the IFRS results, a few non-cash impacts. Let me talk about really operating cash flow, investment cash flow in more detail here. Again, you would see an apparent decline in operating cash flow against a stable operating performance. I would like to remind again, there is about 11.5 million of IPO expenses, including personal premiums and boni, in the operating cash flow, which explains most of the decline here. We also, which seems counterintuitive at first, but if you look at the details, it's clear. We have 4 million higher, 4 million more cash tax payments in this year, which is due to the strong performance of the individual ports, which at the end of the day are the entity paying taxes, mostly Antalya and Barcelona, whereas a lot of the IFRS loss comes from non-cash, non-taxable IFRS hedging impact or FX impact or put operation right depreciation. And another about 3 million working capital impact this year, which, as you know, Turkish ports are in general working capital negative, European ports working capital positive. So the changing mix within the two is a one-off adjustment in working capital. So I'd argue that the business is still strongly cash generative in line with last year. Again, offsetting the impact of the Turkish ports almost fully. We talked about investment activities. That's in line with last year. Last year, there was the investment in this line, the investment into the small Italian ports and Venice, included in the 16 million. And last thing I would like to highlight is the development of the net cash used from investment activities. That is a combination of the financing activities on the debt side, interest expenses and scheduled pay down of debt. Of course, the IPO proceeds are within this line, but I want to just highlight one-off impact you should take into account when analyzing the numbers. We have, until 2017, paid dividends on an annual basis. So within this number is a 27 million dividend payment in March 2017 related to the fiscal year 2016. But also included is the interim dividend of 17.5 million paid in September 2017, which is part of the 35 million total dividend for the fiscal year 2017. So as a matter of fact, within the 21 million positive cash flow from financing activity, you actually have 1.5 dividends, right? This effect will go away next year when you have half an interim dividend, half a full year dividend. But for this year, it's actually 17.5 million more cash outflow within this line due to the interim dividend. I would like to then hand it back to Emre for outlook and strategy.
Thank you, Jan. So you may remember this slide from our IPO presentations. I believe this slide is still as true today as it was 1 year ago during the IPO, if not more so. We are a Mediterranean-focused company that has a global vision, wants to become truly global, and we are building our ports network and building our brand in the meantime. When you look at the strategic pillars here, expanding through targeted, disciplined acquisitions remains our primary growth strategy. That's where most of the growth will come from. But driving yield enhancement in existing ports, organic growth is also very important. So this will happen through ancillary revenues and integration. When you look at passenger numbers, you see that our global marketing is very successful. We are growing faster than other ports in our regions. This will help us improve the profitability of the ports we induce, but it will also help us, I believe, with our acquisitions, as we will be able to drive more yield from new acquisitions. This year has shown the importance of diversification and the cargo volumes, our commercial business. And Jan already talked about Adria's turnaround starting, but really it was the port of Akdeniz in Antalya that pulled it through. With focusing on 2018 growth in Adria, thanks to the block train now available for Serbia, the new crane increasing the port's capacity and the speed at which it operates, and the new warehouse project in Antalya, these are all reasons why I think we will continue to improve the commercial performance of our cargo business. Now, everything we do in terms of branded experiences and branded ports adds value to what we do. This was the launch of the corporate brand identity and the brand promise to cruise lines, to governments, but also the codes and policies, basically the GPH way of doing business. And we'll continue with the rollout of brand identity across all ports, the new website, and improve upon the GPH way of doing business in 2018. And I feel we are at a much better place this year. And this was obvious in Sea Trade, which is a very important industry event that happened just last week. And that's where I was. And it was very obvious that GPH is now a well-known brand in the industry, also by the governments. And lastly, but as importantly, delivering high cash flow conversion in terms of our cash generation, but also in terms of cost-cutting programs, cost control programs. I believe the best time to control cost is when you are growing, not when you stopped growing and you have nowhere else to go. And that's why we have focused on cutting costs, but made really sure that we cut costs from the fats, not the muscles, if you know what I mean, so that it wouldn't hinder our growth in the future. Let's look at a couple of examples. I talked about disciplined acquisitions and this being very important for us. So we have now 12 ports in our project funnel in the pre-feasibility and concession agreement phase. You will see more ports in Americas and less ports in Asia. This also has to do with how the industry has moved recently. And our focus is really growth in Europe and Americas mostly, but we are also continuing looking at a couple of projects in Asia, of course. And we have finalized the induction of Italian ports. We're already talking about it. We had a couple of new projects enter and some leave the funnel in the meantime. But the big projects in the Caribbean, in Americas, they are still there and we have made good progress. We were talking about yield enhancement. Now, I will talk about Cagliari and, I will now talk about Lisbon, but even in ports as established as Barcelona or Valletta, you see that GPH is able to improve the margins, which is one indicator of, I think, yield enhancement. That is, I believe, quite difficult to do, but from 44% to 56.7%, 57%, let's say, just about in Valletta, for example, comes at the back of sharing best practices in improving operations in a port like Valletta. Lisbon was at 7% when we took this port over. Now it's 48%. In the meantime, we have been able to build an award-winning terminal and ran the operations. And now we are looking at the future, and are quite hopeful because we already see for next year 20% increase in passenger numbers. The terminal building is functioning beautifully, and I'm really proud of what we have done in Lisbon. Now let's take a closer look at Cagliari. This is again yield enhancement. What you see is an increase in total passenger numbers, 68%. But if you look carefully, you will see it's not just the passenger numbers that's increasing. You see that the ancillary revenues are increasing at the same time. So that is contributing with the yield. And you will also see that the price per passenger has increased. So we have done a number of things that has pushed Cagliari to this kind of yield enhancement from 3.8% to 33% in basically 2 years, really. One thing that I talked about during the IPO as an idea was the GICs, the guest information centers. We have piloted them in a number of ports into 2017. And this was an idea to serve passengers better, to give them know-how about the destination, to improve their passenger experience. But it was also about having a possibility to offer them services in the destination. Now, I'm glad to say that started working out. One reason why the ancillary revenues in Cagliari are up is the GIC idea. And another good development is that the cruise lines are now positive about collaborating with us to drive more services through the GICs, and this was the idea all along. So it works. It's good to see. So we'll roll it out to every single GPH port in 2018. Waterfront development. Now, as you know, Kuşadası Ege Port was already quite profitable, but we thought it was time to renovate the waterfront, the shopping, the little shopping mall for cruise line passengers. And you see the pictures on the right-hand side. We took the fact that we had low traffic in the port as an opportunity to renovate Ege Port. This actually caused, unfortunately, the Q1 results to fluctuate a little bit, but we are very happy with the result. On the right-hand side, you see that the port looks and feels like almost like a marina. It's a Mediterranean environment, and I believe it will drive yields up further when cruise passengers come back. We know from F&B sales and margins that at least the Turkish visitors really like the new design, and those numbers are doing quite well. So the rent is up on the F&B side. Another very important initiative that I mentioned before is how to do retail in terminals in cruise ports. Now, we talked about the airport example. Now, we think that a similar thing can be done in cruise terminals, but it has to be different. There are similarities, but there are also differentials to when compared to airports. That's why we have started developing this retail design project, and we're using Barcelona and Malaga as the pilots here. We identified parts of the strategy, pillars of the strategy for retail. For example, we think being local and original is very important for cruise destinations. So, when you look at airports, the retail in airports looks very similar. You don't know which airport you're in. We want to make sure that when you're in Barcelona, in our terminal, you will know you're in Barcelona. And the products, the offering, the design will all be very local and original. And immersive. Now, that's similar to airports. Airports are very successful in doing immersive retail. We will use the same ideas and same design. As you can see on the right-hand side, and the left-hand side is now, that is what we envisage on the right-hand side for our terminals to look like. Okay. Now, I talked about diversity and expanding cargo volumes. I think Jan mentioned it as well. So I'm not going to spend too much time on this. The only thing that I'm going to add is the block container train from our port to Serbia is a very important opportunity for us. We've been working on it for some time now. That's operational. We are going into a Ro-Ro business for cars produced in Serbia to ship them out of our ports. And I think it's also an opportunity that Costco started operating the port of Piraeus as a hub for Europe right now. And we believe our port can be fed by Piraeus with feeder ships. And that will be an opportunity for us in the future as well. So we're having talks. And that will hopefully continue our double-digit growth in the ongoing business in Port of Adria and help with the turnaround. So I want to, you know, finally talk about the outlook and the guidance for 2018. As I told you, I was in a very important industry event just last week. And in this event, at the beginning of the event, there's a very important state of the industry panel. And this panel is held by the four CEOs of the four major cruise lines. In this panel, the CEOs talked about the future of the industry. And they mentioned the 97 ships now in the order book. This number has gone up since the IPO, by the way. So there are more ships on order, probably more ships than ever. And this is basically going to cause the capacity of the industry to increase by almost 50% in the next 5, 6 years. We know that as the capacity increases in our industry, the ships are always full. That means passengers will increase. And one CEO said to the host of the event, "If you were Santa Claus and if this was Christmas, I would not ask you for anything else." So that's how optimistic they are. And this, I believe, is very good news for us. So GPH has a very important role to play. We're in the right place at the right time with the right strategy. Having said that, the current trading in non-Turkish cruise ports remains strong. And in Turkish cruise ports for 2018, I think we will stabilize. And the recovery will start very slowly in 2018, and then, you know, increase in 2019, and 2020 will be the year of full, or maybe, you know, if not full, good recovery. What we have received new calls, or we will receive new calls in 2018 from new cruise brands. Oceania, Regent, MSC will visit GPH ports for the first time in 2018, so that's good news. But I see that as a, like testing the waters. The numbers are not material, so that's why we're telling you, you know, we'll be stabilized in 2018 in Turkish ports. Good progress in the M&A pipeline. We will share news with you, hopefully, soon. And resilient demand for exports and what we discussed in Adria in terms of the turnaround of Adria will support the continued growth in commercial revenues for 2018. So putting that all together, for 2018, we expect to show mid to high single-digit organic growth in revenue and adjusted EBITDA. I think, Jan, did you talk about this adjusted EBITDA number expression that is?
I think just that's what in the IPO prospectus, if you see consolidated EBITDA, is exactly the same,
yeah.
The same number. It's a
basically auditors told us that this was a better term to use rather than consolidated EBITDA. We're using adjusted EBITDA right now, but basically it's our EBITDA. Well, that concludes my presentation. Now with the, you know, colorful boats of Malta, which are produced in a town not so far from Valletta called Marshalloch, I want to open up the Q&A session. Mark?
Can I start with a question on the outlook? Sorry, Mark McVicar from Barclays. Can I start with a question on the outlook? And I think it also applies a bit to Q4. Your revenue growth and your EBITDA guidance are both for mid to high single digit. Does that imply there's no real operating leverage coming through? You're implying essentially margins will be flat 18 over 17. And if so, why is it only flat?
Jan.
Why don't you move to the mic, right?
Yeah.
Probably. Why don't we? Which one is operating? Yeah. In terms of In terms of, you're right, that we should see revenue increase resulting in higher EBITDA increase, and that's our expectation. Given that, if you look at, as Emre has explained, each and every port under GPH ownership increases margin over time, and we do have a certain element of economies of scale in every port. Right, every dollar additional revenue will be resulting in less increase in cost. One element to offset this effect is we're talking about adjusted EBITDA. So after holdco expenses, you will have already seen this year a certain increase in holdco expenses, which is all due to the IPO cost. And this year only has effectively half a year impact on these expenses. So that's part of the offsetting. We will, due to investor relations, increased also. We have made new hires, reported on those. Will increase the holdco cost, so that's partly offsetting. But yes, we expect margins to slightly go up, so within the ranges of revenue and adjusted EBITDA as a total result.
Okay, thank you. My other question relates to what you call the underlying profit, which is indeed adding back those various items. You know, for last year, that gets you to 28.5, I think that's
correct.
Right. Yeah. Can you just explain to us how the business then affords $35 million of dividend, because that's more than 100% payout ratio?
We wanted to, first of all, the business has produced strong operating cash flows, and the underlying profit includes elements of costs, which are, for example, related to foreign currency adjustments, which are related, that explains most of it, by the way, about $5 million. And which has not been taken into consideration when the dividend decision was made. So we were wanted to be in line with the guidance at the interim dividends. Wanted to be, no surprises, at least from all the elements we can control. So we're confident about the cash generation of the business, and hence have contributed to a payout ratio, which the way we see it is in line with nearly 100% of the cash generated, because the $28 million, again to repeat, includes about a $5 million charge, non-cash charge related to foreign currency effects.
Okay, and we can expect that policy to continue going forward?
We can absolutely confirm the policy as outlined in the IPO, a minimum dividend of $25 million to be paid, and we will consider the cash flows, in particular on acquisitions, of any given year, to then adjust that number. And, well, as we have seen so far, no cash outflow in 2017 on acquisitions. Will the ability to pay more dividends is there.
Morning, Martin Brown, Shore Capital. Just a couple of questions on Valletta, or one question on Valletta, sorry, and then move on to Barcelona. What's your sort of feeling for the ancillary yield outlook for Valletta, 18 over 17? Obviously came down in 17 versus 16. I think that's due to mix. Can you just give me an update on how you see that for the year ahead?
Sure. So the ancillary revenues in Valletta for 17, there was basically an interesting effect in ancillary revenues in Valletta because of a price increase in some duty-free items that caused the revenues to slightly come down because it was a price hike up. But at the same time, it increased EBITDA levels in those items, which compensated for it. So in that sense, we saw a single-digit growth in ancillary revenues in EBITDA in parallel to the growth of revenues. For 2018, we do not expect a change in price levels that is set now. And we actually see most of the growth in Valletta coming from ancillary revenues in 2018. Because the passenger number growth is not as much, material.
Thank you. And could you provide an update on the plans for Barcelona. You touched on them, but just timing and when we should expect to start to see you reporting an improved ancillary.
Sure. So one important project in Barcelona is, as I mentioned, the redesign of the terminals, not just one terminal, of course, but we start with one terminal. As you know, we have six terminals in Barcelona. Some of them are bigger, some of them are smaller. We start with one of the biggest ones, and you know, we are almost finished with the designs. Then we'll look into finding a travel retail operator that will be interested in taking up those designs and our model and implementing it. That will take a little bit of time. But in the meantime, we're also looking into other opportunities in Barcelona in terms of what we can do through our GICs, through transportation into the city, offering new services to passengers. Also in terms of renting some of the empty estate in our terminal buildings in World Trade Center, which is very close to the city, and I believe it will be a good place to think about some office space maybe. So all of this will contribute to improved ancillary revenue margins in 2018.
Thank you. And Jan, could you provide an update just on the Eurobond in terms of refinancing and the process there?
Sure. Just to get everybody on the same page, out of the gross debt of the business, bulk of it is within a Eurobond maturing 2028. It has been issued in late 2014, November 2014, when the business was essentially 90%+ of the business came out of Turkey. It accordingly is rated in line with this approach and also bears a coupon of 8.125%, which we strongly believe is not a reflection anymore of the credit profile and of the enlarged and more diversified group. But it's a fixed coupon. So that explains 20 million out of the 25 million total finance expenses are a loan into this Eurobond. And as we have indicated during the IPO, if you look at financing raised afterwards, we see margins as low as 300, 400 basis points within that range, not the implied 600 basis points margin of the Eurobond. So just to set the scene for everybody who may not be that familiar. We, as I just said, the Eurobond expires 2021 or matures 2021 in a bullet repayment. So we don't have any, I want to emphasize, any need for action, any urgency for action. But with November this year, the so-called non-call period of this bond expires. So it would give us the opportunity to refinance this bond. And we have actively starting to look into this, talking to our core relationship banks, assessing market opportunities. And it really is a matter of timing. As I think you're all aware, the current reference rate environment rather points towards increases in the reference rate. So that would favor an earlier refinancing. But we'll carefully looking at the market opportunities and we'll use opportune market windows, but be ready to use them, and that could be in 2018 already this year, and to lock in the lower coupon. Offsetting this is a call premium of as you know is half of a coupon, so about 4% is the call premium, and we'll looking into how much we save on an annual basis versus just call premium. It's really a timing matter rather than a decision in principle.
Thank you. And you touched on earlier, Emre, the event last week and the number of port authorities and companies and local governments that were there. Since you've come to the market and have been delivering the pickup in margins and reporting, have you seen an increase in port authorities or local governments coming to you in terms of potential new port concessions?
Yes, Martin, definitely. And I don't know how much of it is due to us becoming public and how much of it is due to new recruits that are, you know, well-known people in the industry, or how much of it is due to our efforts to promote the brand, to talk to people, to explain. There's word of mouth. The word is out about Cuba, and the word is also out in terms of a number of projects, not because of us, but the governments basically wanted to talk to the press, and they were excited that GPH is involved. So all of that, I think, contributed to a lot of interest, and I think everyone in my team would agree that this sea trade has been extremely busy for us, and we have been talking to a number of governments, governmental officials, and also some private concerns.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Please.
Hi, Stevan Bolivic, Goldman Sachs. Just a couple of questions on the cruise port business. Can we get an update on the timelines for the tariff increases in Valletta and in Malaga? And then also looking at the schedule for 2018 and any visibility you've got into 2019, what color can you give us on your key ports, Barcelona in particular? Thank
okay.
you.
So about the tariff increases, you mentioned Valletta and Malaga. Both of those tariff increases have been submitted to respective port authorities, and we're waiting for approval from the port authorities. And we planned quite a long time ahead with this, because we also have to give some visibility, some pre-warning to cruise lines, obviously. So we're actually talking about increases in 2019 and 2020. So this is not about 18. 18 tariffs are pretty much set. For the visibility into the traffic, the calls to our ports, you specifically mentioned Barcelona. So Barcelona, I think, will have a good year in 2018. We expect an increase in numbers, both in terms of transit passengers, but more important in terms of turnaround. One reason, important parameter, one important driver here is the Symphony of the Seas, which will be in Barcelona for the whole season, home porting out of Barcelona, and this is the biggest cruise ship in the world. So that in itself has a very positive impact. But there are other ships. So Barcelona will have a strong year. So last year there wasn't any growth in terms of passenger numbers, maybe even a very slight decrease in turnaround passengers. This year, 2018, will make up for that.
And then on the commercial operations, just what have you seen so far from Marble business this year versus last year? Have you got any color from industry sources on how demand's shaping up in the Chinese market?
Okay. So we had a scare last year in 2017, and Jan already mentioned it, this Chinese investigation, which really affected the numbers more than anything else. You know, the coup attempt was just a couple of weeks of interruption of business, but this was a quarter that gave us the scare. And Antalya, recovered from it in 2017 in the second half. 2018 seems to be, the continuation of the second half of 17. So the marble export business is robust. It's doing well, and we do not expect any weakness in that front. Something that was also positive in Antalya, which we think will continue into 2018, is the cement business. We had mentioned that this business could increase volumes, because we felt that construction has started in the Middle East, and this is exactly what happened. So that also helped drive our bulk cargo revenues in 2017, probably a continuation of that in 2018. And in Adria, so Adria and Akdeniz port are different in that sense. Akdeniz is very product category specific. Adria is a mix of all sorts of goods, on the container side especially. The good thing is we have signed agreements with the likes of Philip Morris, I believe Coca-Cola. So, you know, well-known companies are bringing in more products through the ports into Montenegro or Serbia. So we are seeing a diversified portfolio within our container business in Adria. Does that answer your question? Yeah. Mark.
Thank you. Mark Mavicki from Barclays. Two more questions. Emre, you announced a number of new management hires towards the end of last year. Could you just talk us through what these new people are going to be doing?
Sure. So actually one of them is in the room. AJ Gürso is our new chief legal officer. She's based in our office in London here. And she has, she has a legal license both in Turkey and in England. So she's a member of the, what do you say, Ajay?
Law Society of England. I'm a dual qualified lawyer. I've been practicing in England for the last 15 years.
So she's a dual qualified lawyer, which was important to us. A lot of jurisdictions we have business in, you know, run according to Commonwealth law. So AJ has a wealth of experience also coming from the energy industry, alternative energy, sun, solar energy. So she has a wealth of information about privatizations, PPPs, concessions, etc. So that's also very important for us. Colin is another recruitment we have, who is based in Miami and works as our America's business development VP. And he used to be the head of port development and strategic projects in Norwegian Cruise Lines. Well-known figure in the industry. He's basically after projects in that region and working together with my business development team. A recent hire is Mark Robinson, who is the ex-CEO of Intercruises, which is one of the biggest land-based operators, Shorex operators in the industry. And Mark is, again, a very well-known figure in the industry, and he will focus on developing the destination side, the land side of our ports, more than anything else. So this pretty much completes now our C-level organization, and I believe we have a very good team and very experienced team in basically focusing on this strategic slide that I just showed you.
Thank you. And my last question, I think, is for you, Jan. Can you, as Adria is almost completed in terms of the update, how does the loan work, the 20 million euro loan?
Very good question. Thanks for bringing it up. We have invested into the port of Adria close to 30 million euros in total, including the acquisition, including the CapEx program, which was in total about 15 million, including the restructuring and associated costs with the restructuring redundancy costs. We have been, since the day of taking over the port, in contact with EBRD, and EBRD, as you know, is a strategic partner, institutional partner into the business as shareholder of GPH, but also has been helping out in not only in the Balkans, but basically in all the countries they operate. EBRD is a strong sounding board and support when it comes to local politics, when it comes to business networks in those countries. This as a background. For the reasons of the, we wanted to first demonstrate the turnaround before actually taking loan into Adria itself. It won't surprise you that also EBRD wanted to see some sort of traction. So what this 20 million loan does is refinancing to the most of it existing and already made investments. It will hence be net debt neutral. Out of the 20 million, a small portion, I think, two and a half million only, is in the few remaining bits of CapEx we will have to complete. So it's essentially refinancing investments which we have done to date out of equity, bringing the overall debt to equity ratio to about 1 to 2. The total 30 million, well, oh, equity to debt ratio is 1 to 2. And hence we will see that mostly coming in as cash inflow into the holdco and increase in debt at the opco, so net debt neutral.
Yes, please.
Another question for me, maybe for Jan. I'm looking on slide 6 at the quarterly revenue development, and it seems for the first 3 quarters of the year, there was reasonable operating leverage, but then in the fourth quarter, that's changed around significantly. Yeah, can you just give some color as to why?
You're talking about the difference between those two lines. I think you cannot. I mean, you. It is something which we discussed. We discussed internally, and I think it's just a number. There's not one single item to point to where you can say that this is specifically related to this element. I think it's a mix. It's a mix of various input here, and a mix of various ports. We have a relatively low cruise season. And hence the profitability mostly is in the second and third quarter. A lot of the growth, again, driven by the ports in the cruise side, by the ports which are not as strong in terms of margin, which is mostly those ports we have recently taken over, the Italian ports. And we have seen a very strong volume growth in our commercial ports, but for example in the Antalya commercial port, some of that volume growth was in lower yielding containers within this specific quarter compared to the rest of the year. We had a few more empties in the mix with this specific quarter compared to the other quarter. So it's not a single item to point to. Again, if you look at the third quarter, right? I mean, how can we generate out of 600,000 more revenue, 1.8 million more of EBITDA? It's really the mix within the ports. I mean, on a port-by-port basis, that explains the diverging picture here. Any further questions?
All right, then we'll close. I want to thank you all for coming and
listening
and asking good questions. I guess we'll see each other in the, in the next quarterly announcement. Thank you very much.